would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Jeremy of the Rockets.
I'm Keith.
I'm Camden.
Yeah, and so now, where are you? Are you in Ottawa at the moment?
Yes.
Here's what I want to start with. I like revisionist history. Now, you're a young band. We got your 60s, love for the 60s. You want your music to sit next to current music, which we will get into. And also, online ads. You found each other through online ads. So we're done now, right? There's nothing more to talk about except everything. So talk to me about Ottawa. Were you all born in Ottawa? Give me a little bit of background.
Yeah, we're all
Ottawa born and raised.
Yep.
Wow. And you decided, and are you all going, we're going to get to this in a second, are you all going to uni in Ottawa?
Camden and I are, yes.
Yeah, they are. I do high school. I'm in high school and I do it online.
So formal training, how good do you need to be this band?
I don't think it's a question of how good you need to be for any rock band. I think it's more about your passion and how much work you're willing to put in.
What I want to know is how did this music, and we're going to get to what this music is, how did this music get into your heads?
It was probably different for each of us. For me, I got into this style of music kind of on my own. My parents, mostly my dad, did listen to this style, but it wasn't from that. I just had to, on my own, want to go and find it and keep listening. And I just was really interested in it.
It's similar for me. My parents didn't really listen to too much of that sort of genre when I was a kid either. I kind of gravitated towards it. I got an interest in like surf music. James Bond theme type guitar, little licks like that, and I started trying to learn them myself. So that's early 60s kind of rock and roll surf guitar type stuff. And then I got more of an interest in the, basically went from really old to newer and newer and newer from there.
I do have a musical family. I'm one of the biggest Beatles fans, I think, but my dad's an even bigger Beatles fan. Not just the Beatles, though, but, yeah, there was always music playing around the house or in the car, and I just kind of naturally gravitated towards rock music and playing music myself.
So the online ad, the infamous online ad that recruited this band, what did that ad say?
It said, do you want to go?
Yeah, I was the first one to pick up on it, really. It was on this site called Bandmix, which connects musicians. I'm not sure if it's just for Ottawa, but it was for Ottawa.
No, it's in the U.S. and Canada, too.
Yeah, so it was a site that where musicians can mingle and get bands together. And basically the line that caught me was, was in Jeremy's influence. He posted the Beatles, the Beach Boys, bands that I was also into. And he said that he was looking to make a band that had committed members and were really looking to go the distance. And that was attractive to me, so I followed up on it, and here we are.
It's very brave to take your passion, make a band around it, and then really embrace it as, I don't want to say accurately, because that's not fair, because it's all very original in some ways. We'll get to the covers in a few minutes. When you decided to do this, were you aware that you were making a definitive decision?
Probably not fully of how far we'd take it, but we did know that we did know we wanted to take it pretty far. We found that playing live didn't really work for us to get where we wanted to get, and we always liked to find unique venues. Like a few shows we played at a baseball stadium for the team here in Ottawa. We played before the game started. It wasn't packed, but there were at least a good amount of people. But it didn't seem to be that would be a route that would work for us. So we just went on with the album, and we went online on social media. And when the Eddies came in was when we went to book our studio. The studio manager knew Eddie, so that's how we got to him. And he had heard a video of ours before we got to the studio, so he thought he'd show it to him, and Eddie was interested. So
you chose a studio in Toronto. Did you choose it for classic and modern recording?
Yeah, it was simply just one of the best studios in the area and one of the best studios anywhere, I think. They have a lot of modern equipment and a lot of classic equipment, too.
So classic equipment as in reel-to-reel recorders and analog gear of various sorts and all of that?
Yeah, they said we had the most tubes they had seen on any session at once.
I do think that the two-story Abbey Road-esque studio was also kind of an attraction point for that studio.
Yeah, that's the kind of feeling we wanted to really be able to get into it and put the right atmosphere into the recordings.
It was like a big, cool grand piano and like an old upright piano too, used for their own reasons on the album itself.
And we wanted to get the mix of classic and modern, like you said. So we actually recorded just into Pro Tools, but to have the ability to do a bit more and give it a bit more of a big, newer sound. But we did put some of the songs through onto tape afterwards during mixing, just print the mix onto them.
But this is harder stuff to record small and do as demos. So how much? What did you bring in before you went in?
We had practiced a lot here at my house in the little studio I have. And we practiced sometimes for 5 hours, multiple times a week, doing exactly what we would do at the studio with all the overdubs and how everything would be panned and all. So we had demos that didn't sound as great as if they were recorded in a studio, but we knew exactly what had to be done and what had to be overdubbed so that we could get in there and finish it in just 2 days. And then I came back about a month later to do the mixing, just to be there while they mix it and put in some ideas, because we had certain ideas of how we would pan things and all of that. And the mixing was 4 days, I believe.
Before you walked into that mix, you really probably had a lot of notes on exactly what you wanted it to be.
Yeah, we all wrote our notes, and I brought them with me to make sure we got all that down, and we listened to lots of music from the 60s and lots of modern songs too, to get a sense of how we wanted everything mixed. And of course, the engineers brought their own ideas too.
I'm saying this with a sense of humor. Do you have good lawyers?
I know a few. No, just kidding.
Because you really, you know, if George Harrison were alive today and he were listening to your music, he'd say, "Hey, Rockets, I have something to say to you. He's so fine in My Sweet Lord." But there is no doubt that you couldn't come any closer to being on the edge of the things you're passionate about. And you're aware of that. And you did that on purpose, did you not?
Yeah.
I'd say there definitely is a dangerous precedent with some of these music lawsuits happening right now, where artists are being sued for little melodies or little motifs in their songs. And that is a concern, I think, but I think
I'm having fun with you, but I'm just saying that the guitar licks and the things that you do are so close to the edge of what you love. Like there is no breathing room there for in between. So let's talk about those covers. Let's talk about the Knickerbockers. Let's talk about the Sonics. These are things that I play on the radio all the time. So when you're approaching those songs, where is that border between authenticity and the new? Like, give me an example of on Have Love Will Travel, when you've got those riffs and they're iconic, iconic riffs, Right or Lies. These are iconic. It doesn't get any more, you know, definitive. And yet, I'd say 72.6% of your audience has never heard those songs, has no idea. They probably think they're your songs.
I think a lot of it, for me, is the production. Like on most songs, we double track a lot and pan things left and right, like have a double panned left and right, and all these instruments have different widths. Same thing with the drums, lots of overdubs and automation.
So basically what you're saying is that even though we might not know it's there, in some ways because of the authenticity. They had to bounce tracks, and they only had 8 tracks, or maybe they only had 4 tracks, and they just couldn't do it. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, most of those songs of the era, for example, are missing a lot of sub, not of their fault, but there's not much sub in the recording and things like that.
Yeah, there's no bottom. I agree with you. Yeah, because they just didn't know how to do it then. And, well, they knew, but they didn't mix it that way.
Yeah, and there was there was double tracking, but not double tracking and panning and creating width and all those things.
What is the filter for a song by the Rockets? How do you know when that song is coming up that it's a song for the Rockets?
Fast, catchy. We try to put as much as we can. Everything a melody that we think is good. We wouldn't try to drag anything out. That's why they end up so short.
Is this a career? Do you want this to be a career? You're in high school still. What are the other two of you studying?
I'm studying a Bachelor of Music Performance at Carleton.
Okay, that's appropriate. Good, good, good.
I'm taking Geomatics and History.
Geomatics and History. Perfect for a rock and roll band.
Well, it's at the bottom line, the rock and roll thing is the thing I find the most fun, even if it's a career or a hobby.
How big do you want to take this?
As big as we can.
To the top, Johnny.
Once we've gotten this album out, and it took a lot of hard work and a lot of chances to get it out, so we want to take it as far as possible before we do anything else, and we're just trying to give it everything we have as far as promotion and working on anything we can do with it.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside and then songs by anybody you want to play in between. And the musical sandwich has been done by over 1,000 artists, many of which, you know, you like and you know.